Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Michael Morris. Let's get into our first news story of the day, and this comes from a parliamentary question asked by the DA about malnutrition in South Africa. This is an issue that we've talked about a bit on the show recently because the stats are quite horrifying, to say the least. The DA, in response to its question about malnutrition, has learned that apparently 155 children across the country under the age of five have died in public health facilities with moderate or acute malnutrition and an underlying condition since January of 2025. So in other words, just this year, there have been 155 children who malnutrition has contributed to the death of. The majority of the children were from Limpopo, with about 32 of them, Gauteng with 30, and KZN with 29. So Gauteng and KZN, we'd expect to be up there. Those are the most populous provinces, but Limpopo being up there, I think, shows the level of poverty in Limpopo. The broader stats for the South African population are pretty severe. There has been an increase in malnutrition cases across the country over the last 5 years, with the DA claiming that it has risen by 26% over the last 5 years, which is an absolutely staggering number. About 28%, 29% of South Africa's children under five are stunted from lack of proper nutrition while growing up. And Michael, this, I think, is precisely why on this show we bang on so much about economic growth. At the end of the day, government and society is going to really struggle to feed these kids to solve this problem unless the society is wealthier and has more resources with which to look after our children, because this is just a devastating human cost.
Yeah, exactly right. And as you were giving the introduction, it just occurred to me, you know, that we so often talk very approvingly, not necessarily the IRR, but South Africans generally, about how resilient we are. This is something that we, and even the president, I think just recently, when he was talking about the 49 who have left us, or the 59, however many it is, he himself used this trope of South African resilience. This is our great thing. We are resilient. We press on. We soldier on. We hear. But there's a cost in a way to it, and part of that cost is we become inured to things, and this is one of the most devastating, I think, statistics that likely seeps into the public consciousness without the disruptive outrage that it actually deserves. People will read it, and as they read headlines about the, you know, millions being stolen and things falling apart and so on, and it's a terrible thing that you know the lives of these young South Africans have been sacrificed in this way, essentially, have been lost in this way, purely as a result of, as you say, the absence of economic dynamism, growth, all the optimism, the hope, the life chances, the ambitions, all of that just slides away, where there's no economic value, no economic growth, no jobs, no investment, no future, people don't have a stake, and children die. I mean, that is, it literally comes down to that. They starve to death. I mean, that is an absolutely horrific thing. I did write about it quite recently using, I think, slightly older figures from UNICEF. And that was noting that UNICEF calculates that 1.5 million South African children, that's 3 out of every 10, are already stunted. And irremediably stunted. There's nothing now that can be done to rescue them from that condition, and it's cognitive development, it's developmental potential, and so on. These are kids are not going to be, for instance, Springbok rugby players or you know, stellar students at top universities. They've unfairly been denied these opportunities by this condition that they've been born into. So it is. It's an absolutely horrific thing. Good for the DA for pressing this question. We can't really make, as you say, too much fuss about it. We keep banging on about it, and this is exactly what we need to do. Without proper interventions at now, policy change, new ways of doing things, we are going to continue to exact this terrible terrible toll on our people. So yeah, absolutely awful.
And you know, I think the temptation will be, and I think you can see it in the DA statement on this, is that sort of there needs to be an intervention now. The government needs to go in and it needs to, you know, come up with a plan to feed kids and to prevent this stuff. And I think in the short term, there's definitely a lot of room for that. Right, feeding schemes, having ways of getting kids to eat at school, stuff like that, that's all good. But at the end of the day, unless you make those fundamental structural changes to the society, you can have all the feeding schemes you want in the world, you will never solve this problem. And that, I think, is the true lesson from this horrible, horrible statistic.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. You know, charity is wonderful, philanthropy is essential. But it that too, you know, becomes part of our resilience. This is something that we equally that we take on, and it becomes part of what we assume to be the necessary condition. It's not. It's we're doing it because we're living with the crisis, and we're getting used to living with the crisis, and we shouldn't. We've simply got to say enough. We're going to do things differently. Fortunately, I mean, we had Herman Pretorius giving his webinar today, and is on the second report based on our recent polling in March, April, showing actually that you know, the bulk of South Africans are with us. They also think that, you know, the kind of the policy trajectories that we've had up to now are not working. They don't support it. They don't agree with using race as a proxy for anything at all. They want to see merits being applied for jobs. They want things to be run properly. They want economic growth. They want jobs must be the top national priority, not all the other historical grievance obsessions that the ANC might have, and so on. It's, you know, that's where the country is. So hopefully we are going to see some decisive changes.
And we will talk a little bit about those findings, I think, tomorrow on the show. But I agree completely, is that South Africans do recognize the priority here, which is jobs, because they know that that's the only way out of poverty. You know, people do like getting grants, but at the end of the day, everyone knows that you can't make a better life on a grant, but you can make a better life on a job. And it's about time that the government, I think, got with the program and started really prioritizing economic growth rather than all of the other nonsense that it gets involved in. Okay, let's move on to our next story. There've been some concerning incidents in Cape Town, in particular, of murders around courts. On Monday, a 25-year-old woman was shot dead outside the Blue Downs Magistrate Court in Cape Town. She was an alleged drug dealer and was going to be appearing in court on drug-related charges before she was assassinated, it seems, in the court's parking lot. An unidentified gunman opened fire on her vehicle, killing her instantly. The implication, of course, seems to be from the speculation here from the police, seems to be that someone wanted to stop her from testifying. Presumably, she might have spilled the beans on other people involved in that drug operation. And this is not the only high-profile or very public murder of someone around a court that we've had recently. Just a month ago, a taxi boss was shot dead inside the Wynberg Magistrates Court while attending a hearing on his own case. Presumably maybe a rival taxi gang or possibly someone inside this organization who wanted to silence him. So, Michael, this, I think, is a really concerning sign of how the kind of strength of organized crime in South Africa has gotten much worse over the last couple of years. And this is a really big problem because, you know, when you have high levels of crime, better policing, you know, you can actually start to turn that ship around. Organized crime is a much more difficult beast to deal with. And that, I think, you know, it will stay with us even if we begin to improve our economic condition. And that's why I think it's urgently necessary for us to begin reforming the police service.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Just on a side note, apologies to listeners, my Scottish dog entirely agreed with what we were saying there. I hope it wasn't too much of a disruption. But yeah, I mean, how, you know, isn't it? It's grimly symbolic in a way that you know, in 2 months we've had two murders right at the very nexus of law and order and justice, right in the courts. You know, the one in the parking area outside, person who's about to appear, the other right inside a courtroom. Intervention is a word that crops up often in the South African debate, and I mean, this is, you know, this is a kind of grim intervention that we do see more often than is comfortable in South Africa at the behest of, as you say, organized crime, people who have a huge multi-million rand vested interest in one or another aspect of the underworld, and who, you know, appear to believe they can act with impunity, or just, you know, order their subordinates, their kind of subaltern forces, if you like, into the field to do whatever needs to be done. And it's an entire sort of kind of criminal economy, really, that is just functioning. It's got to be broken if we are going to live in a society that is safer and fairer and just. That's just not going to happen without our actually finding ways to tackle this, and policing is where it's got to start. It's got to start with people knowing that they can't simply intervene, you know, exercise these interventions with such impunity.
I think the first step is probably to begin decentralizing the police force to give power to some of the provinces. But the second step is, I think, to create units to root out organized crime that has unfortunately infiltrated many levels of the police service. And it's only once you restore trust in the cops, when the cops are able to, you know, for example, take a case down seriously and people feel like they've been heard and respected, to follow up on leads, to do those sort of basic activities police work, that I think South Africans will begin to treat the cops better, trust them more, and at that point you'll see the entire system begin to change. But that requires merit-based management. You can't have political connections or race or whatever other thing, you know, seniority, whatever, determining who gets appointed to what in the cops. You can't have, focus on flashy raids where you round up a bunch of people and then don't actually collect proper evidence or something like that. You need to do the day-to-day boring stuff of police work, I think, if you really want to start turning the system around. That's really what our management needs. Currently, you know, we see so much publicity policing and not a lot of day-to-day policing.
Yeah. I mean, it often pains me, you know, that I know, just because I've had some experience in the past couple of years, but just reading the news properly, I think you get a sense of this. There are good cops out there, you know, and they're probably working under terrific pressure. Clever people, committed people, all kinds of professionals in that service. There are not enough of them, and they deserve more support.
And the system abuses them. You know, if you follow the rules, you get kicked around and not promoted.
Exactly. So it pains me on the one hand that, you know, there's that body of people who are really trying their best and don't get the recognition they deserve often. You're being abused, as you say, by the management who've got all sorts of other agendas. And we've got this growing problem. So the solutions are, in a sense, self-evident, but we've got to embrace them.
All right, let's talk about our last story. And the president, as well as a number of ministers, is in the United States at the moment. They're seeking to negotiate some sort of, deal to cease hostilities between us and the United States. Not literal, you know, shooting hostilities, but the sort of the tariffs and the all the other things that have been going on. And there has been some suggestion from the presidency that one of the ways they're going to encourage the Americans to drop tariffs and other things on South Africa, other punishments on South Africa, including the, you know, refugee program and stuff, is to offer incentives for Elon Musk's businesses in particular, getting rid of tariffs or receiving favorable tariffs on imports of Tesla into South Africa, building electric vehicle charging stations. and licensing Elon Musk's satellite internet company Starlink. Now, do I want Tesla investing in the country? I definitely do. I think that that would be great. I think that it would be especially good if we got Starlink here. I think that would provide some serious benefit, particularly to very rural South Africa, where the infrastructure for internet doesn't really exist. My concern here, Michael, is that this is exactly the wrong way to kind of go about economic reform. You give a special carve out to this company. The only way that a carve out like this can be good is if it's the thin end of the wedge that creates a much broader reform. So if they let Starlink in and then also let another company in because they've decided that they're going to basically ignore or get rid of the BEE requirements or for ownership in communications companies, that would be a good thing. But if it stops just here, if you only let in Starlink because it's connected to the American president, then that's exactly the wrong way to do it. That's kind of crony capitalism stuff. And we should be pushing for broader reform, not special carve-outs.
And you know, one of the points that it's often made, our colleagues in particular, I think of Gabriel Krauser, John Endres, our CEO, who both in particular have insights into how the economy works, keep emphasizing the fact that, you know, that investment, when we talk about investment, when we talk about investment that matters, we're not simply talking about investment coming from outside, it's not just foreign investment. And the reluctance to invest is not simply a reluctance among foreigners. It's domestic investment, which runs to, you know, hundreds of billions of rands. But if there is a reluctance there, it is precisely because of either this kind of piecemeal approach, we had to favor this particular company or this particular sector, but nobody else. There are going to be all these kind of mixed rules, contradictory arrangements, and so on. That reluctance arises from that simple absence of a basic trust in the entire process. And there's potentially hundreds of billions of rands worth of investment that isn't happening because everybody's just being that much more cautious, and wisely so, because they can't quite bring themselves to trust the environment. So I think this is exactly right. You know, it's important as it is, we've got to send these messages to big American investors or investors elsewhere in the world, Europe and Britain and so on. But it's every bit as more important that new regime, if you like, of investment procedures is universal, is understood, is plain, is easily explained, and is trusted by the whole range of investors. That's really what's going to turn our economy around, and in fact make us a credible and respected partner in U.S. relations. Yeah, that's where it's got to start. So, yeah, very important point, I think.
Good stuff. All right, we hope you found the show interesting. We will see you tomorrow on the Daily Friend Show, and that's all right.
The Daily Friend Show and the Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.